Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for a very special episode of Cinema Files Radio. Today is Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all you fathers. This is your day. I hope you get that special time, the special cologne you've always wanted. Happy Father's Day to Charles, Sean, Grundy, Russell, Tony, my dad, and all those mentors out there that are our second fathers. Happy Father's Day to you. Today we have a very special guest. We have John Cross, best known for his up-and-coming role in Brett Ratner's Hercules. John Cross is a native Aussie. We're going to have a lot of fun talking to him about his home country, where he came from, what propelled him into this country, and what made him him. He's a great guy. I can't wait for you to hear him. We'll be talking about up-and-coming movies, movies that are in production. And some of our future films. Let's sit back and listen to music. Get ready to roll. Well, welcome to Cinephiles. I am your host, Steve Pisa. Today we're missing Charles Carpenter. Happy Father's Day, Charles. I really want him to spend his day with his family. He was trying to carve out a block of time to make this, but I'd rather you focus on your family and have a great day. He's a great man, a very, very hard worker, and today's a very special day, and I would love for him to be with his family. All right, so let's get into our show here today. So the first thing I want to talk about is my favorite TV show that's on right now. It's actually in its third season, which is hilarious. It's called Veep. Now, if you like Elaine from Seinfeld, for me, I liked her. She was a great character, but I never thought she would ever exceed point mark of being Elaine in Seinfeld. And a lot of what every cast member really tried an offshoot show to make themselves successful. The only one who was really successful at it was Jerry Seinfeld. Have you seen his documentary when he was up and coming again in comedy, and he changed the entire skit? It was incredible. But here in Veep, she's brought in her character to a brand new level. The comedy is spot on. I would say it's the opposite of House of Cards. If you watch the House of Cards and you love that show, which I do, and you want to see something similar but a little different, then you want to watch Veep. Because it's very much the attitude of Frank Underwood with the incompetence of some former presidencies that we might have had. Insert president here. So Veep is a very funny show. Right now you can find it on HBO. You can find it on Amazon, I believe. It's a really fantastic show. What's really great about it is the acting dynamic. Whereas in House of Cards, they depend upon the writing and then the acting to really compile a great show. So you've got the great acting, you've got the great writing, you've got the great story. Everything propels it forward. It's a fantastic, fantastic show. For this show, it depends mostly on the actors and their ability to be comedians as well as actors. The writing is there as well, It's extremely funny, but it's obviously the performances by the performers that make this show the way it is. So I really love it. Veep is the show. It just ended in its third season, going on to its fourth season. I'm not going to ruin it for you, but it's really, really fantastic. What shows do you like? I want you to call in. I want you to call in. I want you to tell me what shows you like. Or some of us, I see you are logged in. We have a lot of people logged in for our user online. Call-in number is 657-383-1444. If you have a question for John Cross, if you have a comment about my favorite TV show or your favorite TV show, I want to hear about that. What is your favorite TV show? Is it Battlestar Galactica? Is it Lost? Is it Band of Brothers? Is it Cougar Town? Is it Community? Really, what is your favorite show? I want to know. Call in. Please let me know. On to our next piece of news here. You know, if you have been keeping up with Comic-Con, Comic-Con just passed as well as E3. Well, Comic-Con's going on right now. E3 ended on Friday, which was amazing, by the way. If you like video games and you like cinema, then you'll love The Division. Tom Clancy made one last game before he passed away. The game was called The Division. If you were looking for an MMO, a huge game like WoW, you know, World of Warcraft, and you're looking for like more of a real-life episode of that, kind of like a Halo plus Zelda, that's the Division. The Division is very much an MMO based on a post-apocalyptic world. And I tell you, go to YouTube and type in The Division or The Division Cinematic Trailer, and you'll see a movie right in front of your face ready to be made. It's amazing. I've been waiting for this game for a very long time, not only because of the game mechanics, not only because I respect Tom Clancy so much, but because the graphics are incredible, the stories for it progressive. You can have up to 7 to 9 to 13 players playing at one time. People can play on tablets. But I definitely want you to watch the cinematic trailer on YouTube. So it's called The Division. That was from E3 this week, as well as the new Zelda game coming out for the Wii U. Fantastic looking game. I don't know anybody on this planet Earth that doesn't like Zelda from Wii U or Zelda period. So if you like Zelda, there's that new Zelda game. But The Division really stood out the most. I've loved this game for a long time. I was in pre-production. And now that it's going into final production, and they're showing off cinematic trailers, that is the game for me to watch. Or if you like cinematic games like The Last of Us, this very much feels like The Last of Us. So E3 was a blast. I saw a lot of great games. Saw a lot of great people. Heard a lot of great things for the future. Especially like Batman Arkham Knight. Awesome. Just beautiful. One of the last games made by Rockstar for Batman. And this is the game that is touted as being the game that represents movies. There's never been a game that's been as popular that represents films, movies, or comic books, ever. These game series are fantastic. So look out for those. But for me, The Division. The Division is the one to look up right now. Because a lot of people, they don't quite know, they don't quite understand, they haven't seen it before. Maybe you have and you've seen little bits and pieces. Watch this one. We just got started with Comic-Con this weekend. How many of you guys going to Comic-Con? Did you dress up? What did you wear? I want to know. Call in. We have our number online as well, 657-383-1444. Did you go to Comic-Con? Did you wear an outfit? Did you wear a uniform? And if you did, what did you wear? If you didn't go and you wanted to go, what would you have worn? What would I have worn? Probably something from BioShock. BioShock is my favorite game of all time. I'd try something from BioShock myself. I'd like maybe a Big Daddy or something like that. That'd be sweet. What would you like to be? Comic-Con was excellent because we got to hear some news from Comic-Con that we've been waiting for a long time. Some things that we already knew. Like Mr. Momoa has been saying for a long time that he is not going to be in the Justice League. Momoa was saying, no, I'm not involved. As far as last week, he was saying he was not involved in the Justice League film. Well, we found out this week that that's untrue. He's actually playing Aquaman. There's Jason Momoa, who played Conan in the last incarnation of Conan, is going to be the new Aquaman. Now you can say, well, he doesn't look like Aquaman. There's no Atlantis either. Let me put that out there. But if you're thinking about a person who lives in the ocean in a real-life situation, and he takes care of the sea, and he's some kind of ocean god, then you would think that he probably would be Polynesian. He'd probably be from one of the islands. He'd probably be one of those in that region type. And that's what he looks like. As soon as Zack Snyder finalized the costume, that's when they made the announcement. So Jason Momoa is going to be the new Aquaman. So now, as far as we know, we have Superman, we have Batman, we have Wonder Woman, we've got Cyborg, we're going to have Green Lantern, we're going to have, and not Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern, by the way. And I want you to remember that Green Lantern by Ryan Reynolds was directed by Edward Zwick. Edward Zwick did Laurie and The Last Samurai. So if you think the Green Lantern stunk, which I did, I don't blame Ryan Reynolds. I don't. When you have an Oscar-winning director or an Oscar-nominated director up there making a film and it fails, I don't think Ang Lee is blaming other people for his misdirection of the Hulk. I loved it, but a lot of people say it's misdirected. I don't think an Academy Award-winning director should really get excuses. It's mostly their fault, in my mind. So, the Green Lantern, to me, was not Ryan Reynolds' fault. Though, they are going to recast him. The Flash. Now we have Aquaman. So we have the Justice League. So what I understand is that the Justice League is going to come out in 2017. And then the rest of the next film is like the offshoots of Wonder Woman and Superman 2, the next Superman film, being Superman 2, the direct sequel, will be coming out in 2018. This was actually leaked a couple days ago, and this person is pretty dead on with a lot of their predictions about films in the future, so I'm very much looking forward to that. Are you looking forward to the Justice League film? And if so, what are you looking forward to? Is this the right cast? Now, I want you to remember that we all laughed at Heath Ledger when he was going to be Joker. I mean, a lot of us did. I should say that. We all laughed. Heath Ledger. Yeah, right. Heath Ledger. Amazing. Amazing. We all know this. This keeps on happening. When you see Quicksilver for X-Men Days of Future Past, we laughed at that costume on Empire Magazine, didn't we? We all pretty much laughed. That's the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. You got goggles on and a painted silver jacket. Serious? That's your costume? And then you see the film, and you see him in action, and you think to yourself, you know, I want to see an entire Quicksilver film. This is incredible. If you saw Days of Future Past, and I'm pretty sure a lot of you have, that was an incredible scene with Quicksilver. Incredible. The movement, and I think that's going to inspire Joss Whedon for the Avengers film to make Quicksilver's powers look a little more similar to what Quicksilver in Days of Future Past is going to be. Now, it's hard to say. I mean, I'm not in Joss Whedon's head. The guy's a genius, so he can pretty much do whatever he wants. It did make a change. So when you think about that, and you think about all the people in the past that you second-guessed, like Hugh Jackman when he was going to be Wolverine, and you may be too young to remember this, but when Hugh Jackman was first going to be in the X-Men film, people were like, you're too tall, you're too thin, you're too this, you're too that, you're Australian. Can you imagine the X-Men movies or Wolverine without Hugh Jackman now? You can't you? Keep an open mind when you think of these people. Keep an open mind because you don't know what's going to happen. As a matter of fact, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, who's in Hercules with John Cross, is touted to be the next Shazam in 2017. He's been doubting it for a long time, but I think it's going to be announced very, very soon. So he'll be the next Shazam, the next Mr. Marvel. That'll be amazing. What do you think? What do you think of the films that are coming out by DC? You know, don't tell me that Marvel's doing great, DC's doing bad. I think DC's just, you know, a little shell-shocked by what happened to them. You know, Batman and Superman are very, very secure properties. You can't just go out and make another, you know, Batman Returns or Batman with a silly costume. You know, George Clooney was excellent, I think, as a Batman. If he was in a different Batman film, of course. You don't need to see Batman with areolas. So I think that's what they're trying to hide from, or they're kind of freaked out by. Who wouldn't be? So I think DC is just taking more of a conservative point of view. And I'll be honest, I would say that's probably the best attitude to take, considering that Marvel is taking off in a rocket ship. You know, a lot of people complained that, you know, the X-Men properties, well, the Spider-Man properties, as well as the, Guardians of the Galaxy, all these properties are three different companies. 20th Century Fox owns X-Men. Sony owns Spider-Man. Marvel owns the rest. This is my argument for why Marvel should not own all the rights to those films. At least, not yet. My reasoning is this. Imagine if Marvel owned all of those comic book titles. All of them. I'm talking X-Men, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, Avengers, all that stuff. Would you have an Avengers film by Marvel? No, you wouldn't. You'd have an X-Men film. And then as soon as X-Men made money, you'd have another Spider-Man film. After Spider-Man made movies, they'd be secure in the property that they had, and they would dig deep into their treasure trove of comic books. You'd never get a Guardians of the Galaxy, I don't think. You'd constantly get Fantastic Four, the popular one. They would make safe bets. But since Sony is picking up one of their hugest properties being Spider-Man, and X-Men is just taking off like wildfire, they have to dig deep, be creative. Think of Doctor Strange and the Black Panther. By the way, the Black Panther has waited so long to have his movie. It's preposterous. They have to dig deep to find these new in the Marvel Universe. That is awesome. That is what you want. Secretly, that's what you want. You don't want Marvel to own these properties right now. Do I think that they'll join later on? Well, absolutely. I think eventually, like Avengers 3, I think you'll probably see Spider-Man and Wolverine in Avengers 3. I think most likely. That is my gamble. But remember, it's a gamble. It's a bet. It's not real. You don't know. But it's my bet. If I know Joss Whedon, not on a personal level, but if I know Joss Whedon as a creator and as a manufacturer of great media, then I know for a fact that he's already starting on that to get that ball rolling. Hugh Jackman as well has mentioned that he wants to do it as well. He said that he wants to be in the next Avengers movie, the third one. And quite honestly, I don't see why those companies wouldn't be heads on. That would be the fourth phase or the third phase of all their films being done. By that time, all of those DC movies should have been made. They should make billions and billions of dollars and be more than free and happy to share the wealth with the rest of their group. So I'm pretty positive that in the third film of the Avengers that you'll see Wolverine and Spider-Man. But that is my argument of why Marvel should not own all the properties right now. Do you have a different argument? Do you think differently? Do you have a different opinion? Well, call me up. I want to hear your opinion. 657-383-1444. What movies have you seen this weekend? What movies did you see last weekend, the weekend before? Have you seen The Edge of Tomorrow? Have you? The Edge of Tomorrow is a fantastic movie. Starring Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt. I think it's fantastic. Of course, I think a lot of the problems right now is that people, you know, they think Tom Cruise and they have their opinions and what have you, and they don't want to go see his film. The movie is fantastic. Really, the movie's really great. And the only reason why you'll miss it is because you have a bias against Tom Cruise, or you don't think it's going to be a good film, or whatever you think. I have no idea. It is a good film. You will like it. The Edge of Tomorrow. If you liked Godzilla, then you'll like The Edge of Tomorrow. If you liked Days of Future Past, then you'll like Edge of Tomorrow. If you like Groundhog's Day, you'll like Edge of Tomorrow. If you like Starship Troopers, you'll like The Edge of Tomorrow. If you like Tom Cruise and any movies he did that were good, you'll like Tom Cruise. You'll like this film, The Edge of Tomorrow. It's based on a manga that's called All You Need Is Kill. And very much like Edgar Wright doing Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. Scott Pilgrim vs. the World was not finished when Edgar Wright finished that film. As a matter of fact, the end of Scott Pilgrim, Knives was supposed to end up with Scott Pilgrim. And then it went through the loop and people started seeing the movie and people started saying, that's not right. That's not right. And if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. Because he basically cheats on his girlfriend. So Edgar Wright wrote it very much like the comics because they ended by the time he finished the first cut. So he finished the film in a different way. He finished that he ended up with the other girl. So he rewrote the manga because it wasn't finished yet and changed it back because the manga version was better. I find that incredibly interesting. So when you look at The Edge of Tomorrow and you look at the manga that it was based on being All You Need Is Kill, it's not finished yet. It's not done. So a lot of people are saying the conclusion of The Edge of Tomorrow is not satisfying. It's satisfying unless you're living in Brussels. Unless you're living in some kind of war-torn country and you want to see some kind of, like, abject justice. The film is good. The ending is good. It's satisfying. It's a happy movie. It's a good movie. You really, really enjoy it. The Edge of Tomorrow. Godzilla is another one. Fantastic movie. I love Godzilla. Which is really interesting. Because they took the director of Godzilla, and he's doing the second offshoot Star Wars movie. So right now there's going to be five Star Wars movies being made, being the three sequels and two offshoot movies, most likely one focusing on Boba Fett and the other one focusing on Yoda. I'm guessing, but I think I'm right. And the interesting thing is that the major complaint about Godzilla was the human component about the film. Now, I have zero complaints because I love the film and I love Godzilla. It looks fantastic and I saw it in IMAX 3D and it was amazing. I loved it. And if you haven't seen it, shame on you. Shame on you. Yeah, it's an excellent film. You have to see it in the big screen. But it's very interesting that Josh Trank, who did Chronicle, and also did, or was also doing the new Fantastic Four, the reboot, is also going to be doing an offshoot Star Wars film as well. I think he's going to focus on the Yoda character. That is very, very interesting stuff. I love it. This is the best time to be alive in cinema today. When we were kids, we were wishing that X-Men would be made into a movie. Spider-Man, Avengers. To all these kids today, it's brand new material, fresh. To us, it's old. We've seen it since we were kids. We were just waiting for this day to appear. Now it's come. Now everything that we desired is what they desire. Isn't that amazing? Do you have an opinion of what the next film should be? I know that Doctor Strange is coming out very soon. They're doing prep work on Doctor Strange. They already have a director. A writer is working on a script. Black Panther as well. Planet Hulk. These are all considered phase 3 positions in the Marvel Universe, which are just fantastic films. I cannot wait for those movies. Anyways, Godzilla. Going back to Godzilla. Edge of Tomorrow. You've got Godzilla. You have several films coming out. Now you have Hercules coming out very, very soon. I don't know if you've seen the trailer yet, but please go see the trailer. It looks amazing. We're going to take a short break, come back, and we're going to speak to our good friend, John Cross. Thank you very much for listening today on a special episode of Cinema Files Radio. Today is Father's Day, and I'm very, very appreciative for you listening today. For all you fathers out there, happy Father's Day. And thank you for listening. Let's stay on and let's get John Cross on here. Well, here's our special guest today. John Cross is coming on. Hello, Mr. John Cross. How are you doing?
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Oh, a second round. Look at that. They love you. How you doing, my
I'd
friend?
I'd like to say I'm very well. I'm very well. I just like to quickly say Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
Happy Father's Day.
Indeed.
John, you obviously have that accent going on there. Where are you from? Where were you born?
I was born in Sydney, Australia.
Nice. So the big city.
In the big city. It's so the biggest city in... Sorry.
Right?
It's the biggest city in Australia, but yeah, there's only 5 million people there. The entire population of Australia is about the population of the greater LA area.
That's 14 million. That's 14 million people right there in that small little area. You know, it's the interesting thing about Australia is that even though they're small in population to a certain extent, they follow us in war wherever we go. So they're our best companions. So, to me, they're a gigantic country. You're born...
Australia and Great Britain have been allies with the United States probably in every war since the First World War.
Yes. I love watching those. I'm a big aficionado of World War One, World War Two, and you know it's something that a lot of people don't realize that the Canadians and the Australians fought so hard on our side through so many different altercations throughout the world. It's amazing. It goes to show a very bright and warrior breed type human. The Australians have always been a sort of hero to the Americans because they fight with us no matter what.
Mm.
So did you? Is it mandatory in Australia for you to join the armed forces, or is it more voluntary? I know in South Africa you need to go. How's it like in Australia?
No, it's a voluntary profession in Australia.
Nice. So we can all move to LA and be actors now.
That's correct. We can all pretend to be warriors instead of being real warriors. They're the real heroes.
Yeah, if you look at there's a great movie based on the Kiwi Nation called We Once Were Heroes, which is a great film. You got to see that. So I want to know everything about you. We met at the Lackey premiere, and I loved meeting you. I loved talking to you. You were very affable. You were funny. You had a lot of great stories. And now you have this huge movie coming out, and we even come close to talking about that. Let's go way back, and let's go back to your childhood. You're born in Sydney, Australia. Where did you go to school and grade school, prep school, high school, and when did that acting bug kick in?
You're taking me back now. we have different names for schools in Australia. Like when I was very young, under 12, I went to a school in Australia called Villa Maria. It was a very small school. Not many people would have heard of it. My high school that I went to, high school for us is the entire 6 years. We don't split it up into junior, middle, and high. So you go to the same school for 6 years.
That sounds like a nightmare. That sounds like a nightmare. You got to be.
Sorry, go on.
Go on.
So it has its positives and its negatives because the positive thing is that the friendships and the bonds that you have that you create there are very strong and they last for the rest of your life.
Right. And when did that acting bug kick in? You know, because there's a lot of very famous Australians who left their country and came out here and made a go of it. And I haven't seen many failures when it came to the Aussie-American movie connection. We have a gigantic Australian acting team out here. Did that influence you as an actor? And what influenced you at the base level when you were young to be an actor? Or did you want to be an actor? Do you want to be a comedian? Because I know you're a comedian. So which one did you want to be, and when did that start?
I caught the acting bug very late in life. I didn't really want to do it professionally until I was 21. I actually did act from about the age of 10 in school plays, but I didn't take it up seriously until I was 21.
Really? What were you doing before?
Yeah. I went to university in Australia and actually studied film and TV, so I was studying to be on the other side of the camera.
Right. Well, you've been in soap operas, you've done national ads, you've done a lot of things here. Tell me about your soap opera experience. What was that like?
That was an amazing kind of breeding ground for my early acting career. In Australia, we have two very famous shows. One's called Home and Away, and the other one's called Neighbours. But they're both filmed in different cities. Home and Away is filmed in Sydney, and Neighbours is filmed in Melbourne. So it offers opportunities for actors in both cities to practice and grow their craft. And I'd say 90% of the actors that come out of Australia have been on one of those two shows at some stage in their career. And I was fortunate enough to be on Home and Away for about five episodes as a police officer.
Nice. That's awesome. And then from Home and Away, where did you go from there? What's our next step after Home and Away?
After Home and Away, my first step was a friend of mine actually produced his own film that he financed himself with some friends of his. They put a million Australian dollars of their own money into the film, and I just got a call out of the blue from him one day because he needed a large actor to be a soldier in his film, and I was the only large actor that he knew because there aren't many actors in Australia that are my size. I'm 6'2" and like 200 pounds. So,
in case nobody's seen pictures of, in case you've never seen pictures of John Cross, he's gigantic. And if you look at my picture in there about Hercules, you see him in the back left hand corner. And most of you have seen him. Just look at his calves. His calves are the size of his neck. It's intense. So please continue. I was wondering who was Hercules for about 5 seconds there. But please continue.
Yeah,
Is the movie. Is this The Complicated Life of Annie Frisco?
That was actually one of my first productions that I did here in the United States. It was actually... It's a web series that a few of my friends are trying to get off the ground. It hasn't quite had any traction yet, but I did the pilot episode just before I left for Budapest to film Hercules, and it's quite a funny little film and idea for a series, and it would be like a comedic web series, which would be terrific if it got off the ground.
And you play Fletcher in that?
Yes, I got to keep my Australian accent. The whole concept of the series is about a girl who's a private eye, but she goes undercover to find out if men are cheating on their wives or their girlfriends. And my character was a guy who was cheating on his wife, but I was quite obnoxious, and that added to the comedy.
all the husbands in the world right now are laughing. Did you die in it?
she is an assassin as well. So, but we didn't get to that part of the characters. One of the male characters does get killed.
Don't ever cheat on an assassin. I think that's the lesson to be learned.
That's correct. Yes. You never know who you're going to be dating.
So you went. You're also in Hollywayne, right? And you're playing Moose.
Yes, that's another web series that a friend of mine is developing. I can't actually tell you much about that because I haven't seen the entire script, but it's another comedy.
Nice. Now I want to talk to you about your comedic role, because I know, like last night, you're off doing your comedy role, you're off doing your it's basically acting and comedy at the same time because it's a performance. I want to know all about this. When did you start off comedy? Because you're a glutton for punishment, obviously. You want to be punched in the face. If you want to be a comedian, then you obviously want to get punched in the face. So please tell me, when did that begin? When did that begin in your career, and what drew you to comedy?
Oh, actually, it's only been a recent interest of mine. I only picked it up maybe 6 or 12 months ago, because I've always wanted to do action, but I thought that now that, you know, I'm here in the United States, I should, you know, diversify and expand my kind of skills or repertoire, because, you know, you can't just do one thing. And I can't sing or dance to save my life, so I thought comedy, because I'm quite funny. And people would often ask me, you know, John, don't you want to do action? Why are you trying to do comedy? And I thought, well, you know, I might as well create my own little niche market where I'm a comedic action star.
Nice. That's nice. So, you know, when did you start off with comedy? You started off 6 months, you said 6 months ago?
Only about 6 months ago here in the United States. Since then, I've performed about 5 or 6 times, and I've been lucky enough and fortunate enough to be given the opportunity by a terrific lady called Tammy Jo Darren. I think that's how I correctly pronounce her name. She organizes these comedy events at two locations, one place called the Marlow Bar on Sunset Boulevard, and also at the Comedy Store, which is the second most famous comedy location in Los Angeles and probably on the planet. And I performed there last night and also about a month ago, so it's been terrific, and I've been getting great response.
Nice. So people have been responding kindly to your newly adopted career path of being comedy acting.
Yeah, well, nobody's thrown any rotten tomatoes yet.
people are cruel in comedy clubs. I mean, if they don't like you, they can be quite cruel. So, I mean, if you're having a good experience, that is, by far, probably about 10% of the population of comedians I know. And that's awesome. That is purely awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
so right now
I'm very happy. Obviously, like, there's, you know, I'm in the infancy of it. And, you know, there's guys that have been doing it for 2 or 3 years, and they're amazing. And I've got a lot of room for growth and improvement, but I've started well.
Is there any kind of advice you can give people if they want to do stand-up or if they want to go up there and do a comedy? Is there anything you can tell them with your, I would say, you know, it's limited experience. It's 6 months and you're getting in there, but you have a lot of experience in media play as well as in production. What advice would you give to people who are trying to get into a comedy or stand-up comedy?
I think preparation, like, just going over and over your script, because there was one performance I actually did where we were supposed to be up on stage for 8 minutes, and which doesn't seem like a long time, but when you're a fresh face, that can be a lifetime on stage.
Right.
So there was one performance where I was ill-prepared, and I got to about the fourth minute, and I just I didn't have anything else, and I just went, okay, thank you, and walked off. And I was a little bit disappointed, but I learned from that experience, and I said, you know, right, because as an Australian, we don't fold. We keep going until we get it right. And so I said, well, the next time, even if nobody laughs, I'm going to stand up there. Even if I have to stand there in silence for 8 minutes, I'm going to stand there and take it. So that's what I did.
So basically being a stand-up comedian is a lot like being a prisoner. Yeah, stand there, just take it, and keep on going.
Exactly. You know, because I mean, I believe if you're going to commit to something, you should commit to it 100%, even if you fail miserably at it.
Right.
You know, at least you.
No, go. Well, please go.
No, you go.
At least
on.
You what?
I can't even remember what I was going to say.
Ha!
Yeah.
Ha! No, I know I threw you up. All right.
No, that's all right.
Really, yeah, I should learn how to just shut up. So, when I look at the stand-up comedian skill, that's an intense skill because it's very difficult to do because you're being judged on the spot. It's also different than stage play, where people can actually talk to you while they're sitting down there. They've been drinking. Do you find it discouraging sometimes, or do you just keep on pushing forward?
Look, I think, you know, if you're going to be in the entertainment industry and you can't handle criticism, you're in the wrong industry.
Right.
You just got to develop a thick skin and keep going. You should listen to your critics and take that on board and not take it personally and think, well, wow, I'm glad they said that to me because now I can take that information and use it and improve myself.
Right. Well, boys and girls, this is one of the reasons why I wanted John Cross on here. You can obviously hear the humility coming out of his voice. He could be a huge star in about 2 weeks. You're going to see his name everywhere. Right now we have a fellow Aussie named Jack. We're going to put Jack in line here. You want to ask John a question. Hello, Jack. You have a question for John about his acting. Please ask.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, basically I just want to know what kind of advice you'd give anyone coming from like Brizzy or Australia. You know, if you want to be an actor, what's the first thing I should do? You know, should I get an agent or like, it's so hard, you know?
Yeah, I agree, Jack. Are you calling from Australia?
Well, no, actually, I'm calling from the US, actually. But I have friends all over, so...
Are you here permanently in the US, or are you on vacation, or...?
It's just really hard. Like, I'm here just for a little bit on vacation, and then I want to become an actor.
Okay, terrific. I mean, yeah, in Australia, obviously, the industry is a lot smaller and it's a little bit more difficult to get into. If you have the opportunity, I would advise, you know, going to do some training if you're still, you know, young or under 25. If you're over 25, I think, you know, that kind of ship has sailed and you should just try and get straight into the industry.
How old are you?
So I'm 36.
Are you?
I've been doing this for quite a while, but I've only just come to the United States 2 years ago, so...
I just wanted to say congratulations on everything because it's really important for, like, Australians to be inspired by other people, and I think it's great what you're doing. So.
Terrific, yeah.
And good luck with the movie.
Thank you, Jack. Good luck with your career, and, yeah, try and get some work back in Australia or here or wherever you can get it.
Thank you very much, Jack, for your question there. It's really awesome for people from Oz to give us a call. Draco, thank you very much, or Jack, thank you very much for calling in there. Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question there. You know, people come out here, this is something that I was expecting, which was, you know, technically, you're from Australia, so a lot of people are going to say, well, you're from another country, and you're, you know, very much like Arnold Schwarzenegger came from another country and dominated this country. Was that a thought on your mind of, I want to come to America? Because we all have dreams. And we have focuses. We pump them up.
I want to be president. I want to do this. I want to do that. Was that a thought in your mind before you came out to America that I want to come to America and conquer it? Was that a thought or was that not?
No, it was definitely a conscious decision to come here. We have a terrific industry in Australia, but we breed such great artists, like not just actors, but writers, directors, producers, DPs, across the board. But the problem with the Australian film industry is financing, you know, because we have a very small population, so trying to get films up and running is quite difficult, and the films that do get produced are mainly dramas, which are terrific, but I'm trained with swords and guns and fighting, and that's all done here or in the UK. So it was always a conscious decision to end up here in the United States.
Technically, a very young man growing up in Australia, you must have seen, not Hugh Jackman, because I think Hugh Jackman is more of a localized actor, but Nicole Kidman and what have you. Did you grow up watching Nicole Kidman and being inspired by these Aussies, or did you just kind of focus on yourself and look at that way? Because Russell Crowe's also from there as well. Did you look at these actors and say, I want a similar career path, or did you use them as examples, or did you just kind of supersede them?
I haven't superseded any of those guys yet. Hugh Jackman's amazing. But I think
yes.
the closest idol I have in Australia, and he's a similar type to me, is Russell Crowe. I think no matter what people say about his personality, and I get frustrated about that, and I've never met the man, so I'm not going to comment one way or the other, but no matter what you think of him, he's a terrific actor, like amazing. Like, his body of work is fantastic, and I did follow his career. He was actually well known in Australia before he hit the US market, and there's an Australian film that you should watch if you're in the United States that really put him on the map in Australia. It's called Romper Stomper. It's quite
yes.
violent and confronting, so if you don't like that sort of thing, I wouldn't watch it, but it's an amazing film and an amazing performance.
Oh, I all films coming out of Australia are really amazing. I mean, just even starting back with Baz Luhrmann, I mean, he's an amazing director. And then you start to look at all the other Oz directors. They're really fantastic. A different feel as well. They have a very eccentric look on the universe. It's very, very interesting.
It's funny you should mention Baz Luhrmann, because my first job in the industry was not actually as an actor, but as a crew person on Moulin Rouge, which is quite a famous, popular film. And I was, I'm listed as a trade assistant, but I was actually, it's a glorified name for a runner. So
right.
I did a lot of work in a lot of different departments on that film, and I did everything from, getting the coffee to researching historical facts about 19th century France and getting some of the props, so, and everything in between that.
Right.
Yeah, and that was an amazing experience.
Being a runner, being a glorified runner, you're around Baz Luhrmann. You're around his energy. You're around his directing. I mean, I worked location for many, many years. And just being around these guys really influences the way that you perceive and see the movie or cinema industry. I remember working with Verhoeven, which was one of the last jobs I ever worked on. It's incredible when you work with these people. I mean, a lot of people say, I just worked production. Yeah, you worked production with Baz Luhrmann. You didn't work production with, some shenanigans. You did something fantastic. So that's amazing. All of you guys who are listening in, if you have any questions for John Cross, please call in. The number is 657-383-1444. But I do have a question here from Eileen Charles. What is John's perfect role? What would his E! True Hollywood Story sound like? So what is your perfect role?
Well, that's a good question. You're putting me on the spot. I think that I think that I would like to play the reluctant hero. That would be my perfect role. I don't want to give anything away, but there is a character out there in the X-Men universe that I would love to play.
You're going to be an actor like that. You don't want to put that out there, huh?
No, because, you know, people go, well, he's my competition. Let's cut him down. No, I'm just kidding.
Uh-huh. Can we guess? Can you give a couple guesses that maybe we can guess on this one?
He's a bad guy. So I don't know what else to... He's Marvel. I actually grew up, I heard you talking about DC at the beginning, and I grew up collecting Batman comics, and I love the character of Batman. I think DC did a terrific job with him in the recent films, but, you know, I'm partial to Marvel with the way they've produced their product. I think that DC should take a leaf out of their book.
I agree.
I'm not going to say any more about that.
If I came up to you as a Marvel exec and I said, listen, I want you to play a Marvel superhero, who would you like to play? Can you say that?
Okay, well it's not actually it's not one of the heroes. I would like to play Armageddon.
Armageddon? No.
Yeah, the evil guy.
He's a great character.
He is an amazing character.
So you grew up reading Batman. So did I. What influences for Batman was in your life? For me, I love Batman because he was a self-made man, a self-made warrior. What interested you about Batman?
Yeah, I agree. I think, besides being what little boy wouldn't want to be a hero by night and a playboy by day? but yeah, I think being a self-made man and Australia, you know, that's in our culture. You know, we always root for the underdog, and Batman is very much that type of character. And you know, all credit to Superman. I think, you know, he's a terrific character as well. But he's an alien from another planet who's got superpowers. Like, he doesn't need to really try. Batman has to work hard.
He does. You know, it's interesting. This is total dorkiness coming out in us. But in the original comic books, what I really liked was the kind of the inspired love affair between Batman and Wonder Woman. And one of the reasons why was because she was so impressed that a human being who didn't have superpowers can fight and could defend everybody, when Superman obviously had superpowers and could defend anybody because he's basically a god. So I found it a little discouraging when you look at these new comics today. They have Wonder Woman and Superman being lovers, and it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that a strong Amazonian woman would go for the strongest man on Earth. I would think that she'd want to go with somebody that's, you know, compassionate and...
Yeah, well,
you know anything
you're
about
actually
that?
Teaching me something, because I didn't know about that love affair. I must have missed
that's
whole...
Dork.
I'm a dog as well. I love dogs. I think nerds and dogs should rule the planet. You know, I love going out and doing role-playing and sword fighting, so it doesn't worry me when people criticize me for doing that. They can go and do what their own thing.
No, I love it. And I see that there, that you do your own sword play. Where was that inspired by?
I got interested in that about 5 or 6 years ago when I did a production of Macbeth in Sydney, and I was fortunate enough to get the role of Macduff, which is besides Macbeth, is probably and Petruchio is one of my favorite male characters in a Shakespeare play, and I'm a passionate Shakespeare supporter and reader, and whenever I'm in London I go and see a Shakespeare play, and we had a fellow who's probably one of the best fight choreographers in the Southern Hemisphere called Kyle Rowling. And Kyle has trained all the actors for...
are back live here. We're trying to get John back on the line. Let me see if that happens.
Hello?
Hello, John.
Sorry, mate, I dropped out.
Please continue.
Sorry,
was
I was
fun.
Talking
live,
about...
Live radio, boys and girls.
I was talking about Kyle Rowling, who was the choreographer for Macbeth. And he's probably the best fight choreographer, one of the best fight choreographers on the Southern Hemisphere. And he trained all the actors for the Star Wars trilogy in Australia, and he also trained Eric Banner for the movie Troy. So he's very competent. So and I ended up training with him for 4 or 5 years, and I also continue to do training here in the United States.
Nice. And the focus for that is to use that in film?
Yeah, well, obviously to translate it to film, but I just enjoy it. I own my own broadsword and two cutlasses, and I actually help train some people on occasion. But it's for every specific role you do, you have to learn a choreographed fight for that role. So, like, you know, Dwayne Johnson in Hercules had to learn a choreographed fight, as I did. But you have to really know the basics, and it has to be in your body to be able to do that type of performance.
If you see John Cross walking down the street with a sword, run. Run for your life, it's obvious.
I wouldn't carry a sword in America. Everybody else here carries guns. It would be useless.
Never bring a sword to a gunfight, I guess.
Yeah, no.
Go ahead.
No, nothing, nothing.
You know, you can comment on Russell Crowe, but I'm going to. I love Russell Crowe. I'm a huge fan. I love everything that he does. If you want to see, listen, audience, if you want to see a great movie by Russell Crowe, go watch 3 Days. That is a fantastic movie. And for a lot of people, and I do not want you to comment about this, but for a lot of people, they hear that story about him hitting the guy over the head with the phone, and they take that in consideration. I want you all to understand one thing. If you have a pregnant wife at home and you get discouraging news that something's in trouble and somebody gives you a problem and you're not going to hit somebody over the head with a phone because they're pissing you off, then you probably have a different world than we do. Because as far as I'm concerned, Russell Crowe has been a gentleman and has done great films. People criticize him for Les Miserables, but I think the acting was fantastic. He's a great actor. Keep on watching his films. I love Russell Crowe. We have a question here from Wiley and Charles, who says, in your best villain voice, can you say, in a world of good and evil? That's Wiley
and
Charles.
Good and evil. Her name's actually Willeen. She's a good friend of mine.
Oh, I butchered your name. Willeen Charles.
Let me say the sentence. Okay, hang on. In a world of good and evil.
Willeen, did you get that? Good. We have somebody else here who knows you. Slavo from Hungary. He said he works with you in Budapest. So let's see what he has to say. Slavo, thank you for joining us here on Cinephiles Radio. You had a question here for John Cross.
First of all, thank you for having me as guest on radio.
Thank you.
Hello, John.
Hello, Slavo. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm very glad to hear your voice, and I'm to say to you, it's very nice to also, because you're very, when you work with extras, you're very nice. So, and also to be extra, it's very hot and warm, also very in Budapest, and also you are always nice.
Thank you, Slava. Yeah, I believe that, you know, no matter who you are on the set, you know, from Dwayne Johnson to an extra, you know, everybody's important and everybody contributes to that film.
Also, for me, it's okay with two questions?
No, not a problem.
Is for one is I see when I am working with you have very good connection with them with Mr. Director Brett Ratner also. So I was wondering how you get this good connection with him for he's all make all good movie with Dragon, Red Dragon, and also other film. So how you, as extra and also as actor, and also as how do you get for this good relationship you had?
I think it's just a natural process. Like you can't force a good connection. And in terms of Brett,
it's a skill you have.
It's a natural skill I have. I'm very, very good with people.
I appreciate that also.
Yeah. And in terms of Brett offering me more roles, you know, that's at his discretion. I can't force that situation. Like, you know, if I'm lucky enough that he offers me more roles, that would be terrific. He's a fantastic director, and I'd love to work with him again, but that's out of my control.
Yes.
And so also, what was your second question?
Yes, it's for accent. It's for all in typical, if you are actor, if you're trying to be actor and you're if you're from Europe, and if not, your accent is not good. And also for you, you're Australian, maybe you want to play American roles in the movie or TV or comedy, or how do you work for the accent to be very good?
Well, first of all, I'm lucky enough. Well, thank you for the question. And I'm lucky enough to. The fact of the matter is, my first language is English, which is a huge benefit to me. The second thing is, I have been offered roles with an American accent, and I have to work with a dialect coach to change my accent. So
is there a difference? This is coach for us for training, also for voice.
Yeah, I mean, LA, the amount of coaches for different things in this city, like there's from fight choreographers to accent coaches, everything is at your disposal in this city, because the whole city is based around the industry of filmmaking. So we have that benefit. There may be somebody in Budapest, I don't know, but you have to do the research, who can help you with this.
Nice. Thank you for answering our questions, and thank you very much, Slav, for calling in. We really appreciate that. For everybody else who wants to call in, please do call in if you have questions for John Cross here. The number is online, as well as I keep on posting it on our message boards here at 657-383-1444. Thanks, Slav, for giving us a call here. We're going to take a small little break here. We're going to reset, and then we'll have a little conversation with Mr. Cross about his experience with Brett Ratner. Stay tuned. Thank you very much for listening in on Cinemaphiles here with John Cross, talking today about his career, his past, his present, his future. Right now, let's talk about something that's very, very close to him, very, very close to his heart, and that is Hercules. Now, Brett Ratner's Hercules is going to be coming out in July 25th. It's very different than the other Hercules that came out. This is the Hercules that's based on the comic book. If you haven't read the comic book is called Hercules, the Thracian Wars. It's starring Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, Brett Ratner as director. It's like Ian McShane, Reese Ritchie, Joseph Fiennes, John Hurt, and John Cross. Having completed his legendary 12 labors, Hercules, the Greek demigod, has his life as a sword for hire, tested when the king of Thrace and his daughter seek his aid in defeating a tyrannical warlord. Now, I'm very much looking forward to this film. Very much. The Rock is an excellent actor, and I really love him in everything that he does. I really want to see him as Conan. I'm really glad that Arnold Schwarzenegger is coming back as Conan, and then Dwayne can come back and do Hercules. I want to hear what John Cross has to say about this film. I want to hear some interesting stories, and I want to hear about his experience. So John, you got introduced into Hercules through Brett Ratner. How did you get this role, or how did you get introduced into this role? Please tell me this experience for you.
Well, the first thing was that I had to do an audition here in the United States in Los Angeles. The minute I walked into the room, Brett was actually there. I was fortunate enough that he was there, and he looked at me because he was unsure whether he wanted to use me because I'm a fresh face, well, in the United States right. Anyway. But the minute he saw my size, he's like, okay, we'll put you in the movie somewhere. But he wasn't sure where. And so when I got to Budapest 8 months later, I would say 70% of the cast wasn't, well, they'd been hired, but they weren't placed in any roles, so they were still trying to figure out who was going to play what. And Brett was trying to place me as one of the soldiers, and he wasn't sure which one. And he said, how loud is your voice? And I said, pretty loud. And he said, how loud can you scream? And I went, pretty loud. And so he took me outside of the room, and he ran like 800 meters away, and he said, I want to hear you. And so I yelled at him, and he could hear me, and he said, right, you got the role of Lieutenant Marcos. Hello?
I'm here.
So yeah, that's how I got Lieutenant Marcos.
Nice. You got Lieutenant Marcos.
Basically, I had to command the army.
You know, we shouldn't be saying it. But, when I first saw you, I recognized you from this film. I was very blessed to see a couple little snippets here and there of the film a little while ago. And audience, listen, this film looks awesome. Just awesome. I can't wait for it to come out. Now, you're playing Marcos in this film. No, you first got
Lieutenant
the
Marcos.
Call, Lieutenant Marcos, when you first got the call of Lieutenant Marcos was going to be your part, what was the first thing you did?
I rang my mother and father.
Nice. How happy were they for you?
Oh, they were ecstatic, you know. Like, you know, you've been waiting your whole life for this opportunity. And they were in Sydney, Australia at the time, and it was, only 3 a.m. in the morning there. But I didn't care. I woke them up.
Well, I wouldn't think they would care either. I'd be like, just tell me the good news.
Exactly.
So you got the part, and where they called you up, you went for a fitting. Where did you go to film this? What did you do? Who did you introduce yourself? Let's start off this way. You got the part, Lieutenant Marcos. They called you in for a fitting, obviously. You went in for a fitting. What happened next?
Well, actually, all the fitting and stuff was done in Hungary. So once I had Marcos, they flew me to Budapest in Hungary because that's where the film was made.
Okay. Yeah, how was your experience there?
I mean, I've never been to Hungary, but, I mean, Budapest is a beautiful city, and Hungary and the Hungarians are such a lovely, welcoming people, and they're a very, very attractive race of people. I have to say that the men are very strong and handsome, and the women are all very beautiful and feminine.
Everybody go to Budapest.
get on the first flight.
Everybody get the heck out of America and go to Budapest. Everybody's hot there.
And he went there.
A dollar goes for what?
A dollar there goes very far. Like, I don't know, about 1,000 of their currency.
That's awesome. That is awesome. That reminds me of old New Zealand where a dollar really was, you know, for us, a quarter was their dollar. It's changed now. But you can buy a house for literally like, what, you know, $100,000, like a huge house. Incredible. Nowadays, it's up. Prague was the same way. It was really cheap. Now it's up. But when you went to Budapest, you found that things were cheap, inexpensive, I should say.
Yes and no. There's certain parts of the city, but it's definitely starting to vibrate, that city. Before the war and before the communists took over, it was known as the Paris of the East, and it was a beautiful city, but then it kind of decayed under the communist regime. But now they're starting to rebuild, and people from all over Europe and all over the world are starting to come back to Budapest, and it's starting to be the jewel that it once was. Hello?
Hi, John. We're here. Hello. We're just waiting for Steve Pisa, the host, to return.
Well, I can hear you again.
Yes. So many calls right now. So many people calling in, so many people are writing in, and so many people are listening. It's actually traffic. So it's very interesting. The host can boot it off the show, but it's a good thing because a lot of people are listening in. So please, let's continue on. So you went to Budapest. You started introducing yourself to people. How did the production start, and how did the people welcome you to Budapest, knowing that you were doing a production with Brett Ratner and Hercules?
Well, I mean, nobody knew me because I'm new, so it was quite intimidating when I first got there. I the only person who I knew was Brett Ratner, and you can't exactly call him up on the phone and go, "Hey, let's hang out," because he's working,
right,
22 hours a day. But with the other, there was two particular actors on the film that really took me under their wing, and I became friendly with a fellow called Joe Anderson, who's British, and also, as you mentioned before, Rhys Ritchie. And they're both terrific, lovely young male actors, and they're doing well. They're both kicking goals, and they'll be coming up through the industry over the next 18 months. I was fortunate enough to have that, and also the people of Hungary, were so welcoming to me and the cast and crew of Hercules.
Right. Well, you have, excellent actors in this film, being John Hurt and what have you, Joseph Fiennes, who I really enjoy, especially since, Shakespeare in Love. Did you get to work with these people? Did you get to talk to them? Did you enjoy being with them? Obviously you did.
Well, it's funny, those two actors, with John Hurt, yes, I got to work very closely with him. Amazing man, and Ian McShane and Peter Mullen, and those guys you know, were the old school, and they often sat together and talked to each other about, you know, the old days and acting, and I could just sit and listen to them for hours, you know, and absorb their knowledge.
Ian McShane is an excellent actor. I mean, that guy's...
I mean, amazing. But with Joseph Fiennes, I never actually got to meet him. There were no scenes I did with him. So, I mean, that's sometimes how film goes.
Right. So what was your experience on this film coming from, you know, I'm going to put it very plainly, minor productions to a major production? How did that feel coming from this to...
How did it feel? I felt exhilarating and terrifying all at the same time.
It must be an actor's dream and nightmare at the exact same time. Like, wow, this is incredible. Oh, my God. What am I doing?
There was one particular day on set where I can't really say what happened, but... It was my Ben Hur moment. I had to pretty much be in control of 600 people and the way they moved. So I was basically directing people in the scene. And I was just sitting there and I'm going, what the hell am I doing? I threw up a number of times.
Wow. Nice.
But I got the job done.
Now, Lieutenant Marcos is somewhat an important character in the movie. Please tell me, what is your character's part in this film, if you can? If you can't, then that's perfectly fine.
I mean, basically, he is the second in command, and also gives the orders to the Thracian army. That's about as much as I can tell you.
We can't wait to see you in this film. The film is insane. Go ahead.
I can't wait to see the film either.
I think I've seen more of the film than you have.
I think you have. I'm like, God damn it, how did you do that?
I can't tell you. The person will be fired. But, you know, I had to keep on telling you, like, this person is going to get fired if I tell you about it. Who I watch this with, but you know, I remember sending you the trailer. The trailer was so exciting, so exhilarating. How did you feel the first time you saw that trailer?
Well, the teaser trailer, you know, it was obviously exciting, and then the next trailer that came out. But when I saw the British trailer, like, I was just like, oh my God, this is going to be the movie of the summer.
Yes. I agree. And the thing, you know, I might end up to ask is, you know, we've met each other before. We've talked plenty of times before for quite a while now. I'm not big into asking people who, you know, don't need. But you're an excellent personality. You're a great guy. I love talking to you at the Lackey premiere. I love talking to you on the phone. I love talking to you through Facebook. We had a nice relationship going back and forth. Well, what keeps you being this nice guy, considering the fact that you're going into Hercules, starring Dwayne Johnson and director of Brett Ratner? I mean, what keeps you this humble? What keeps you this motivated to be a nice guy where other people would probably be right in this fame all the way to the top?
I think that, I think it's either in you or it isn't, but as if in any profession, my father's a doctor, and that's even a more important profession than what I'm doing. It just so happens in modern society that actors are revered because it is such, it seems like an impossible thing to do. Like, and it is, it's a very difficult industry, and you have to be slightly crazy to want to get into it. But in another way, it's terrific because you get to share and your knowledge and tell a story to a large audience. And And I think, you know, you just have to realize in yourself that every job you do, you're fortunate enough to be able to do that, and you're lucky enough to be able to do that.
So you're wearing your costume. You're Lieutenant Marcos.
Yeah.
You're in a field with full of hundreds of X-rays. You got Dwayne Johnson and the rest of the cast in front of you. You got Brett Ratner yelling out instructions from some corner with a big megaphone, most likely. How do you feel at that moment as you see the crowd of people there to be in the same production that you're in?
Like I said, it was just exhilarating and terrifying all at the same time, you know. And I loved the experience. It was the most incredible experience of my life. And I hope that I will get that opportunity again. But in some ways, I do regret that it was it was my first U.S. production, because it was such a huge production, because it was. There were moments where I couldn't get to enjoy being there because I was so focused and feeling the pressure that I couldn't just breathe. But I still am thankful for the opportunity that I was there.
Right. Oh, you know, the interesting thing about these things is the more you do it, the calmer everything becomes, the more you can enjoy. I can understand being your first huge production and being so wanting to be on the mark. It's difficult to enjoy yourself because you have to be on your mark. You have to be very, very good in order to stand out. I can understand that, definitely. But when you saw the trailer, were you able to see the excitement and happiness afterwards, huh? So that's probably the flaw of being an actor, is that you don't get to see your part, get to see your exposition without it being made and finished. Do you think that's part of the problem?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the other actors on the film was teaching me a bit about this, because, you know, as no matter whether you're the lead role or supporting or right down to an extra, you know, once your role is done on that film, you just have to let it go, because, you know, you don't know whether you're going to make one scene or 100 scenes. It's out of your control. I mean, Look at what happened to, I'm sorry, I don't know her name, but the actress who played Mary Jane in the latest Spider-Man, she didn't get one scene, you know, so that's it, like, she's out, you know, so it's out of your control, which is unfortunate, because, you know, she probably did a very good role, but it just didn't happen.
No, I understand that part, actually. I read that script and saw what they were doing. Unfortunately, with Spider-Man, they put so many pieces in the mark that if they put Mary Jane in there, it wouldn't have made sense in the end. Did you see the film?
Yeah, I saw Spider-Man. It was terrific.
Yeah, you see, one of the flaws of the film, to me, is when she died. Because the thing about it is, when she dies, Spider-Man's supposed to believe that she was alive. And he's supposed to be so confident, and he's supposed to roll down and see that she's actually dead, and then he blames himself. And then afterwards, you see the repercussions by the government, the military, the police force, even supervillains that see him as a murderer. So you couldn't have seen that in the movie, and if you would have had Mary Jane in the film, it would have made the relationship between him and Gwen Stacy convoluted, and it would have made sense when she died. So I can see that part, but in other films like X-Men, Days of Future Past, I mean, they cut a lot of people out of that movie. There are so many characters. Were you afraid when this movie was going to come out that there were so many characters that you might be cut yourself?
Look, yeah, I mean, sure, that's a fear, but, you know, you just have to let it go and be thankful for the opportunity that you got to work on that film and just move on to the next film, because that's all you can do. I mean, and once Hercules comes out, you know, 2 months after that comes out, you know, it'll, you know, I mean, it won't fade away. It'll always be there, but, you know, I have to keep my career alive by doing more roles.
Oh, absolutely.
Basically.
Oh,
we can't just sit on Hercules for the rest of my life.
No. Well, you could, but I don't think you're going to.
No, I'm not.
Are there any interesting? Can you tell us any interesting stories from Budapest? Something that caught your eye or caught your ear, or something that's kind of quirky when you're in Budapest filming this film?
Nothing. What about the film, or like?
No, about being an actor in Budapest and filming a film for the first time, and because this is your first experience in a gigantic film. I mean, it's got to be strange for people to be treated very differently than you were maybe 3 months ago, and craft services treating you differently, and you're up there doing a film, you're wearing a gigantic costume, and you know it's a different experience.
Well, actually, the only unique experience I had on this was that I actually got my very well. Not a full trailer, but I got my very first trailer on this movie. So that was kind of exciting.
My very first trailer.
Yeah, but it was only third of a trailer. But I got part of a trailer.
Were you sharing it with other people?
Yeah, so there's different types of trailers. There's full-size ones, which, you know, the lead actor and some of the main cast had. And then there's half-size trailers, which have two rooms. And then there's other trailers that have three rooms. And that was my trailer.
Well, then I have to ask this question. You're in a trailer with two other guys, right? How was
well,
that experience
like?
Oh, really?
Yeah, we get our own space.
Nice. That would kill them.
What do you mean that would kill them?
If you're in three people in a room in Budapest, I imagine it's humid and it's hot. And if you're in a little camper by, or like you know what I mean, like a camper by yourselves, all three. I can't imagine being in a room stuck with three people. But you obviously had partitions.
Yeah, there was partition, but the walls were very thin, and obviously, you know, some of the noises coming out of the other rooms were quite X-rated on occasion.
Interesting is the word we use. So you meet Brett Ratner, you meet Dwayne Johnson, you film this excellent film, you come back home, you sit on it. What do we do next? What's our next move after that? What have you been doing since you finished your role as Lieutenant Marcos in Brett Ratner's Hercules?
Well, I've got very exciting news because I'm now doing my very first film since Hercules, which I'm actually going to be shooting in New Zealand, so close to my own home country. And it's called, it's called Safari Club. And it's a smaller film. It's, you know, it's a very low budget film, but I have a larger role in it. And a very good friend of mine who I met here in the United States before I went to Budapest, a guy called Ben Medina, who's a terrific director. But this is his first feature film, but he's worked on commercials internationally, is going to be shooting the movie. He's going to be directing it, and I'll be acting in it.
Nice. So what character will you play in the Safari Club?
I haven't actually seen the script yet, but I know I'm playing a mercenary.
Awesome.
So it's another action film.
Nice. So Safari Club will be filmed in Australia?
No, New Zealand.
Oh, New Zealand. Excuse me, everybody. You're not sending... They are different places,
like
I understand that.
That's like Canadian-American.
No. That was a technical error, boys and girls. I know the difference between Australia and New Zealand, okay? So I don't want to hear anything from anybody. I know so many Aussies, and it's hilarious to me when I hear people call them Kiwis and what have you. I know inside their heads they're going, I'm going to pop your head like a balloon, dude.
Exactly.
So you're going off to New Zealand to film this film, which is
yes,
the Kiwis did.
In August.
In August. Nice.
Yeah.
And the director's name is Ben Medina?
That's correct.
Awesome. Awesome. So after you finish this, are you going to continue to do stand-up, or are you going to do stand-up before you leave off of this production, or what are you going to do next before this film?
I'll try and do maybe one or two more stand-up gigs before I leave. And then after I return, I don't know. I probably will try and focus more on getting work in film and TV rather than doing my stand-up. But, you know, I'll always continue to do the stand-up on the side.
Well, as we wrap up, let's focus on that for a second there. If we wanted to see you on stage telling us jokes and making us laugh, where can we see you?
That's a good question. I haven't been given new dates yet. Like Tammy Joe invites us. I usually do it about once a month. So the next time she invites me, I'll put all the details up on your website. But yeah, I haven't got no dates at the moment.
Awesome. Well, you know, if we want to reach you, if we want to find out where your news is going to be displayed, do you have a fan site? Do you have a Facebook account? What do you have?
I do have a fan site. Let me just have a look here.
You can tell that John Cross is new to the Star World because he's looking up his titles of how to reach him. That's hilarious to me. Look at this guy. He has no idea how big of a star he's going to be. He's looking right now on the computer, I bet you $1 million, on what the hell he's doing next. It's amazing to me. I can't wait for you to be famous, man. You owe me sushi, by the way.
I do. I'm going to take you out. So I do have a fan book page. It's on Facebook. It's called John Cross Actor.
John Cross Actor. And you also go by Joseph John Cross as well, right?
John Joseph Cross.
Nice.
My stage name is just John Cross.
Just John Cross.
Yeah.
That's how you can find him. Look him up on Facebook. John Cross Actor, or John Cross the Human Being, and then you'll find them on there. So you're going to do a couple of comedy acts. That's what you're going to do before you leave off to New Zealand film your next film, Safari Club, after Hercules. After you do that, you're going to go off and do a Safari Club. When you come back, what are your plans for that? What are your plans when you come back from the Safari Club? I know it's a little ahead of schedule because you need to finish your film first, but when you come back, what's going to be your focus? What's going to be your concentration? What are you going to do?
I have to get an agent first. I haven't yet to get an agent in this country, and then just go to auditions. That's,
I don't think you're going to have
any problem
with that.
That's all I can
say. I'll tell you that. John, you know, John, you're an excellent character. And when I met you for the first time, I really, really enjoyed meeting you and knowing you. When I first had the chance to get this radio show, one of the first three people I wanted on the show was you. I find you to be affable and friendly and a really genuinely good guy. I'm really looking forward to this movie Hercules, as well as Safari Club, as well as everything else that comes your way. Is there anything else you'd like to say to your fans before we say goodbye?
I'd just like to say thank you for listening, and I'm so excited that you know you're all out there, and I know there are people listening all across the globe, which is an amazing thing. Like from Australia to Great Britain to, as we heard before, Hungary. And I hope you all see the film and you all enjoy it. And just as a side note, the film doesn't actually open globally on the same date. So if you want to find out when it's opening in your country, you should go to the Hercules website and it will tell you there.
If you want to find John Cross, please look on your IMDb. I've had a couple people having problems with that. Look up Hercules. You'll find him on the list as well if you're having a couple problems. But type in John Cross, your IMDb. You will find him. The film we're gonna see him in next is Hercules with Dwayne Johnson, directed by Brett Ratner. Then after that, we will see him in The Safari Club, directed by Ben Medina. It'll be directed in New Zealand. Also, his comedy acts. Please go on to his Facebook, look up John Cross, and I'll put it on our Cinephiles Radio Facebook account so all of you can see that. Keep up to date with this guy. He's a fantastic character, fantastic comedian, fantastic actor, and a great personality. John Cross, thank you very much on a very special Father's Day for joining us on the show. God bless you, and I hope all the best for you in your future.
Thank you, Steve, and happy Father's Day once again to all the fathers out there.
Thank you, brother. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you later. Everybody, we're going to take a little short break here, and then we're going to rejoin us and have a close-up conversation. Listen up. And tell me that wasn't a great conversation. I can literally talk to John Cross for hours and hours and hours. You know that you know somebody and you're having a good time when your questions kind of scatter out and pattern out like that. It's kind of what I want, to be honest with you. What I really wanted for this show to be more natural. You know, classic Stern, classic shows, classic. Or, you know, questions are questions. You know, you sit next to somebody on a plane and you have a simple conversation and you ask them about their life and you have a great, great time with somebody you didn't know before. That's what I wanted the show to be. So I hope that's the way it's coming across to you. I appreciate everybody calling today, especially on a Father's Day, and listening to our show. I greatly appreciate you listening in. I can see the numbers in front of my face. It's a fantastic audience. We're going to close up our show in about a second here. But I wanted to, again, thank John Cross for giving us a call and giving us a great interview, giving us a great insight into acting, as well as being Australian, coming to America, working on his film, working on his acting, working on his comedic skills. It's amazing to hear somebody coming from literally a foreign country, coming here and making a difference. I'm first-generation American, so I totally understand. My parents came here, give it a go. You came out here, give it a go. That's very brave. Hey, we're going to take a short little break. We're going to close up our show talking about very interesting things. right, well, thank you very much for listening to Cinephiles today. If you want to call in and ask a question, the phone number here is 657-383-1444. And we'll answer any questions you have or put anything on the air that you'd like to discuss. But I wanted to finish off with discussing the new movie that's coming out very, 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 very soon, which is Boyhood. I saw a little bit pieces. We talked to Shane Graham last week. I saw a little more of the film this week, and I very, very much enjoyed it. If you didn't hear our last broadcast, Shane Graham was on from Boyhood. It was a fantastic show. It's a great movie. It's a great character. Please listen in. It's on our audio files. If you go in there, it's a week old interview, and you can download it, or you can listen to it, or listen on YouTube, or download it from iTunes. And as soon as we're done with this, in about 5 minutes, you'll be able to listen to the entire conversation with John Cross. You can download it, iTunes, listen on YouTube, all those sources. Thank you very much for everybody for joining us today on a very special, special episode of Cinephiles Radio. We greatly appreciate you being here today. For all you fathers out there who are listening today, thank you very, very much. My father's name is Rosario Pisa. I love him very, very much. Came from Sicily. Died fairly young in my life, 53. But still, he was a very, very important part of my existence. On this day, I'd like to honor my father, Rosario Pisa. You're my light, you're my love. I thank you for being part of my life, for teaching me everything I know, for loving me, despite who I was as a person or as a character, regardless of how young I was. Again, I'd like to thank our guest, John Cross, from Brett Ratner's Hercules, soon to also be seen in Ben Medina's Safari Club. The Hercules will be coming out July 25th. Remember that you're all special. And today on your special day, enjoy your day. Enjoy your family. And God bless. Whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, thank you for being here. And I'll see you next week. Thank you also to Lisa Pisa for producing the show. Lisa, Lila Okunlani Pisa, thank you very much.